Thank you very much.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of
KBOO
our
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, it's Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. On today's program, we're proud to present an encore broadcast of our latest Julian Assange special, Fighting for the Freedom of WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange. On the program, you'll hear from Julian's father and brother, along with our own Randy Credico. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
This is Flashpoints, your daily investigative news magazine. We broadcast every weekday from the San Francisco Bay Area from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's KPFA in the Bay Area. And joining us for this special on Julian Assange is his brother, Gabriel, and his dad, John Shipton, Gabriel Shipton and John Shipton. And also joining us, as I said, is Randy Credico. A little bit later on, it's sort of a family affair. You're going to hear from some sound from Julian that Randy and I did a part of his series coming out of New York City. Again, welcome to Flashpoints, John, and welcome Julian's brother, Gabriel. How are you doing today?
Yeah, we're doing very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, good to have you with us. And let's start with you, Dad. What is the prime? Congratulations, you've had quite a tour. Julian has been recognized by various institutions. Tell us about the motivation for the tour at this time and some of the things that have happened along the way for you.
Is that for me? Okay.
That's for Dad.
Gabriel and I. That's for you. That's John here. We did a few tours in Australia, in fact, four. And we worked out, and we came to the United States in January in an attempt to see members of the Biden administration. They communicated to us that, you know, they'd better to come back after the inauguration. So the experience of the tours in Australia taught us the value of going to see people and just mixing with regional media and bringing together people in groups that could discuss amongst themselves and assist us by writing to parliamentarians. And that worked really well in Australia, so we thought, well, we'll have a go in the United States. And naturally, the United States is where the decisions are made regarding Japan.
And Gabriel, do you want to jump in here?
The motivation to come over here and do this is, this is where the place where the decisions are made in Julian's prosecution. So this is where the prosecution, originates, and so that's why we're here. To sort of take action where the prosecution originates. My motivation, I'd come and join this worldwide campaign later. I only sort of joined in 2019 after I saw Julian in Belmarsh prison. At that point he was on suicide watch. He was in the health wing of the prison, and after that visit, I thought, if I don't get out and do something, then I might never see my brother again. So that sort of launched me on this to join this worldwide campaign, which is just growing and growing every day. I mean, as we move across the country, there are more and more people coming out to find out about Julian's case, what he's being prosecuted for, and come and see us, tell us they're supportive. And yeah, it's been really encouraging. I think in New York we had to expand the venue three times. We had to add more tickets in DC. We had a packed house. One of the videos from our New York event with Roger Waters has gone completely viral, and it's over a million hits on online. So it's just encouraging to see how much interest there is in Julian's case here.
I'd like you to talk a little bit more about your brother and what it was like growing up, and was it expected that he would go down this path, become an internationally renowned publisher, editor, writer? What were the early clues?
Julian was, I got to know Julian probably better in my late teens, because we have an age difference, 10 or so years. I'm quite a bit younger. He was always involved in, just standing up for people who are suffering injustice, basically, and trying to figure out ways how to right injustice. One of the early things that he was involved in was a cryptography program called Rubber Hose Cryptography, which was in year 2000, around that period. So it was very early days for encryption, and he devised this piece of software that a journalist could use and be able to keep information secret even if they were being tortured. And so how it worked is it was a piece of encryption software that had multiple layers. So if pulled over at a border or arrested, and your USB stick was confiscated and you were being tortured, you could give up one password, and that would give your torturers access to just one layer of the encryption. And in that layer, there might be something that, would satisfy them and they would stop torturing you. But the secondary layer would remain encrypted and invisible, which is where you would put the information that you did not want them to find. So, protecting sources and things like that. So from a very early early on, Julian was interested in this sort of field of, journalism, cryptography, how to sort of, protect journalists, protect people, and fight injustice.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with John and Gabriel Shipton. They are brother and dad and brother of Julian Assange. They're on a tour of the United States, calling attention, trying to do everything they can to manifest the force to free Julian Assange from jail. Also joining us is a good friend, Randy Credico, whose programming on Julian Assange has been crucial in calling attention in this country and around the world to what's been happening with Assange. Randy Credico, welcome back to Flashpoints. Good to have you with us.
It's, you know, really, so far I love this. You got two outstanding individuals on. And Dennis, I want to just start by saying there was a time in 2017, I know you're going to play a little pastiche from it, of my last interview and your last interview with Julian, just prior to him being mothballed by the Linda Moreno administration a few months later. But the fact is that when that ended in 2000, when I left the AI and you picked up the slack here at KPFA for the next ensuing 2 years, we did another 25 shows together. So this station and Flashpoints has really played a critical part. I mean, interviews with Julian, interviews with Thomas Drake, interviews with John Pilger and Stefania Morici, and just about anyone that matters. You picked up the slack on it. And so I really appreciate that. And I want to say that that... just looking at this right now, at where we are with the Assange case, it is so critical. You know, if something happens to him, and both you and I, Dennis, have been involved in all political cases in this country. You have longer than I have because you've been a journalist and I've been a comedian. But going Leonard Peltier, Mumia, there are all of these political cases out there, political prisoners. But we realize... you know, we stop and say, if we don't have a free press, and that's what's happening with Julian Assange, if he is neutralized, and then what happens next? You, you know, KPFA, WBAI, how are we going to talk about Leonard Peltier? How are we going to talk about Mumia and the tens of thousands of other people who are in prison languishing under this racist a criminal justice system if we don't have a free press? Julian, is if he goes, that's why I'm so focused on it and have been anally, because it represents everything that could possibly happen to free speech in this country if he is brought to this country and put in prison. We're all done. This is the most critical case, political case in the country at this point, maybe the world.
I agree with you, and I want to do this, Randy, in the tradition of the shows, the many shows we did together. You've been following this tour closer than I have. I want to turn the mic over to you for a bit and let you question our guests from your knowledge.
All right. Well, look, I will say this, Dennis. They're going to be in your city in San Francisco, and you've been on this for many years. From the outset, there are a lot of people that, like, because they fell for the disinformation, the smear jobs, all of that stuff that went on Julian, whether it be that bogus, the sexual allegations, his connection with the Trump campaign, all of that stuff meant to smear him, besmirch his character, all of that stuff. You were there and you realized it from the beginning what it was, because you're aware of what governments do, and this government in particular does, to quell dissent. And there were people that even at your station and at my station at WBAI that fell for it, that actually fell for the disinformation and the smear campaign. But now that that has been neutralized, the smear campaign, we realized it was all lies, it was all garbage, and everyone's coming together right now. It's not too late. And these gentlemen here, let me ask you, Gabriel, what it was like for you to to, you know, view the lies and the smears about your brother. How did you get? How did that affect you personally?
I mean, you know, it's been going on for years and years and years, Randy. I mean, you know, like almost 12 years. And I think, you know, what was always very obvious to me is this all started after Julian published, you know, the Afghan war logs, the Iraq war logs, the Guantanamo detainee files, all these, you know, amazing publications that he partnered with. You know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, the Spiegel, all these media institutions around the world in publishing, all this, you know, all these negative news stories, all these smears, all this mobbing, it all started after Julian exposed corrupt, you know, the corruption and lies that, you know, the U.S. government has been telling the people. So for a very long time, it's been obvious to me, you know, what's been going on. You know, this is a sort of, this is, like you say, this is from the playbook. You you know, you attack someone's personality, you give them that ick factor, and then you go after them, you know, through the courts. So
yes.
I think, you know, it's you know, it's just obvious. I mean, I've obviously had, you know, I have friends who fall for it, and you know, it's just always working to explain what this is actually about. You know, this is about Julian publishing and exposing lies and corruption of the people that we our elected officials.
And John, let me ask you, your son is being treated like a criminal. I mean, he's a hero to so many people. How does it affect you as a father to see your son being treated like a criminal, like he did something wrong? What is your response? How did you feel when this first took place?
Well, you know, there's a funny response in the sense of irony. The harder they go at your kids, the stronger you become. When they push your children to the wall, then you become very strong and determined to fight until, well, not being overly dramatic, fight until you drop. That's the circumstance that arises in the breast when they attack your kids. That's how I felt all the way through. That, given the opportunity and the timing, the resources, that I would embark upon. Well, you and I worked together on this, and Gabrielle and many, many other, probably about 100,000 people worldwide. Somebody reported to me and sent me some statistics on Facebook saying that there had been about 30 million people visiting in one way or another, inquiry or information about the prosecution of Julian Assange and the deluge of malice that the Swedish Prosecution Authority, the Crown Prosecuting Service, and the Department of Justice and their executives have delivered to Julian over this 12 years.
Yeah, it's just amazing that it's been 12 years. Your son is an anti-war activist. I mean, you know, that he exposes crimes by the government, whether they be war crimes, torture, mass surveillance, you name it. That's all he does. He's just a reporter, and it must be so bizarre, Kafka-esque, and I don't even like to use that term because he knows why he's being tried, because he exposed all of that. But the fact that he is in this position, and you know, it's unique for you too to see it, because this doesn't happen every day to somebody's kid. Our brother, Gabriel, you must have been shocked when these charges were first brought up against your brother.
I think we sort of knew there was an underlying, you know, secret indictment for quite a while. So I guess we you know, sort of knew it was coming, and Julian, you know, was adamant that all the time that, you know, all this whole time, these last 11 years, is that this would be the eventuality, that this this is where the charges would originate from. The DOJ was pushing, you know, was just sort of biding its time and standing and had this, open prosecution just waiting to go. So I think, we weren't sort of, I don't think I was surprised in that way. I think we sort of, expected that it would come to this. But, I think it's just what is surprising is that it's actually still going. It's still moving forward. We expected after Obama, Obama sort of, under Eric Holder, they had the New York Times problem. Obama, commuted Chelsea Manning's sentence. So we sort of thought that, under Biden, that this would, we would just revert back to the Obama administration. So what is surprising is that it's continuing under the new administration. I find that quite surprising.
Let me jump in here, Randy. Let people know you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with John and Gabriel Shipton. That's the father and brother of award-winning Australian journalist Julian Assange. They're on a nationwide tour. They'll be here in the Bay Area. For those of you who are listening locally, they'll be here a week from tomorrow. They'll be joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker and legendary whistleblower Dan Ellsberg. Both of those folks are deep and strong supporters. We'll be among other luminaries as well. We'll give you the information as we move closer to the date. I also want to let you know that this national tour that they're on is meant to bring awareness of the importance of protecting whistleblowers and journalists. That's all of us. They are calling on the U.S. government to drop its prosecution and finally let Julian go home. Let me ask you this, John and Gabriel, what goes through your mind? Is there a certain fury, anger, rage at the fact that so many journalists and news organizations that benefited from, that utilized, that respected, I say respected Julian's work in the sense that they used it thoroughly, and now when the stuff hits the fan, everybody's sort of quiet. All those noisy journalists are quiet. Randy tried to raise this at a meeting a year or two ago with journalists, and he got dragged out of the room. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, that was very disappointing, particularly as this is an important point, particularly ignoring the prosecution of Julian Assange endangers the entirety of the press corps Western worldwide because of the oppression and intimidation. Equally, publishers and publications are constrained because no publisher or publication wants to face the fact that you have to have lawyers in five jurisdictions to defend a journalist and have a journalist in jail after detention for year on year and the publication and for that journalist mob sneered and so on. So I was very shocked that they didn't realize that this is a circumstance that was going to come down on them. Once the prestige of journalists is lowered, as we can see now, that enables governments to move against them. If they hold their prestige up and if they have some sort of unity, then the government certain sections of the government think twice about attacking them. I want to make the point very strongly here that every journalist association in the Western world has come out in support of Julian vigorously and firmly. That that journalists in association with their employers and publishers haven't over the time was disappointing. However, the Washington Post and The Guardian and The New York Times had editorials advocating that this prosecution not go ahead. The circumstances and the realization that it's the intimidation and the oppression of publication and journalists is universal to the Western world, and it's a problem that they ought to attend to as quickly and as firmly as possible.
Gabe, you want to take a shot at that?
I think they're slow, it's a tough one, and I think they are sort of coming around, and they're coming around, you know, slowly, and we have to, you know, really support them to be able to do more reporting, and that's why, you know, doing shows like this and doing this tour and all these sort of things encourages them to get involved more on this issue. So that's the sort of way I look at it, is that, you know, that they need they need support to be able to do this, and that comes from independent media, and it comes from the people voicing their concerns, you know, that they're interested in this subject and they want these people to report on it. As John was saying, he's seen executive editors at the Washington Post and the New York Times voicing their concern that the prosecution of Julian is it's an attack on press freedoms and First Amendment in the United States. And you, like 24 organizations, wrote a letter to the DOJ in February, which was reported on in the New York Times. On World Press Freedom Day, Jen Psaki was asked a question about Julian Assange. So we are seeing this slowly, we're getting this back into the mainstream media. And I think, you know, that's really important, that we sort of keep pushing them, keep trying to support them to really make this an issue for them, because it matters to them. You know, it's their First Amendment too. It's the whole country's First Amendment, and it needs to be defended. Otherwise, it'll just disappear.
Can I jump in, Dennis, here?
Yes, please. Go on, Randy.
I understand the diplomacy here, but the mainstream media has not, they circled the firing squad rather than the wagons hitherto for Julian. And I see some of them, you know, breaking away a little bit. And the senior editors at the New York Times and the Washington Post, and Margaret Sullivan in particular at the Washington Post, have come out and realize that this affects everybody. It affects all of them, except for somebody said, look, these guys will survive. Guys like Jim Sciotto and his twin brother, Jim Acosta, they may be the same person. I don't know. They'll survive. This because, that's what they do. They play, you know, do the company business, Operation Mockingbird. But there are a lot of people out there that are, you know, not afraid to go into the water. They're getting a little better on this because they realize it will have blowback on them if they don't, stand solidly behind Julian Assange. I mean, as John Pilger said, he has shamed a lot of journalists by exposing, you know, what happened to those Reuters reporters and all those children, the mass surveillance that we saw in Vault 7, that these people should have been on top of. Instead of wasting their time with Russiagate, they should have been on top of this because it affects all of us. And Julian, even in the most difficult circumstances, put out Vault 7 while he was ensconced in that embassy. He still had the courage and the guts and the integrity to put that stuff out there. And that's what a journalist is supposed to do. We're all better. We are all informed because of Julian Assange. And I really feel bad for these people who call themselves journalists that have not circled the wagons around him. And so I know it's diplomatic to say that they're going to come around. Some of them haven't come around yet. And And I think that some of them will, but this is a great contribution. This is going after Beethoven. This is going after Tolstoy. This is going after Einstein of journalism. That's Julian Assange. What he has done is unprecedented in the history of journalism. No one's done what
and also the awards that he should have been given, but were given to all the people who used his material, who turned their back on him. You know, I mean, this is the deep work of deep journalism. By the way, let me interrupt, Randy, because